Kaya, Wanju, hello, welcome to another episode of The Curb. I'm Andrew F. Pierce, and this is a podcast where I bring you in-depth interviews with filmmakers, creatives, and curators of culture. This podcast is recorded in Boorloo, Western Australia, sovereignty never ceded. Director Imogen McCluskey continues her exploration of suburban Australia with the comedy drama film Nugget is Dead, A Christmas Story. This delightfully relatable Aussie Xmas tale was written by Jenna Owen and Vic Zerbst, who both act in the film alongside Aussie screen legends like Gia Carides, Damien Garvey, Ed Oxenbold, Steve Rogers, Mandy McElhenney, Kerry Armstrong, and Tyrell Mora, and many more. Here, Steph Stuhl is a dermatologist in training who has her feet in two worlds. The shiny sheen of Sydney, where the pull of her bougie boyf, played by Alex Snow, sees her drawn towards spending Christmas with his family. Early in the film, we meet his mum, Tara Maurice, who gives Steph the complicated and intense rundown of what's expected from their family experience. For them, Christmas will be the introduce the family to the girlfriend and potential fiancé. A factor that further drives a wedge between Steph and her family, who she carries a level of shame about. But Steph's disconnection with home is short-lived when she receives a call from her mum, Gia Carides, saying that the family dog, Nugget, is dead. Well, he's not exactly dead, he's just not feeling that well. Not wanting to miss seeing the pup she grew up with one last time, Steph rushes home to be with her family, all the while thinking she'll be able to return in time for her boyfriend's Christmas. In the process, she reconnects with them and finds why she loved them to begin with. What follows is a rapturously delightful and utterly joyous celebration of Australian Xmas, full of the deep reverence for the tackiness of the tinsel-strewn households that we live in, replete with the Coles-bought pavlova and overburnt sausages on the barbecue. There's an emotional honesty and warmth to Nugget is Dead that is found in Imogen's first feature film, 2019's Suburban Wildlife, a narrative that explored the pressing disconnect that younger generations face when they want to seek a life out of the suburbs and in the city where they feel they can grow. That concern is within Nugget is Dead, but it's presented in such a deeply relatable and enjoyable manner that by the time the climax arrives, you're not completely aware that you're shedding tears of joy and sadness all at once. As you'll hear in the following interview with Imogen, I absolutely love this film a lot. I particularly enjoyed experiencing the work of Imogen McCluskey and seeing how her perspective of Australia grows and changes on screen. Throughout the conversation, we chat about working alongside actors who are also the writers of the film, what her time at the AFI Directors Conservatory taught her as a filmmaker, and what she hopes audiences will get from watching Nugget is Dead together at home. Nugget is Dead, A Christmas Story, launches on Stan on 21st of November 2024, and it is a film that I highly encourage watching with a young audience, but mature one, say from 12 years up, and with your family and friends as well. Really, really great stuff. If you want to find out more about the work that we do at The Curb, then head over to thecurb.com.au. We're a completely independent website that lives on the support of listeners and readers just like yourself. If you can and you want to support us, please visit patreon.com/thecurbau to keep our lights on from as little as a dollar a month. To get you excited for the film, here is a snippet of the trailer followed by the interview with Imogen McCluskey.
Nuggie! Steffi's coming home!
Stephanie, we cannot wait to have you for our Christmas soiree.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, it's nothing too flash. Just cocktails on the terrace, then everyone around the piano.
Mom, what is it?
Steph,
Nugget is dead.
What?
Well, not dead, but not good.
Shay, do you dance?
Look at what Shay Shay's got.
I think it's working. Keep going, babe.
Come on, Nugget.
Seb's coming tomorrow. He was always going to come tomorrow.
I need cuzzy hugs right now.
You have to let me do your lashes. You look that hot.
Okay, let's get to the vet. What? What's wrong?
Here.
Oh, my God.
I'll just get the ice to bring it down.
Well, you're going to need an entire military operation to bring that thing down.
Dad, can you go any faster?
I'm being a cautious driver.
We're not in a rush.
We are in a rush to find out if Nugget is sick or not.
Ahoy there, matey.
So, has the boyfriend arrived yet?
No, he's not coming. I was always going to do Christmas with his family.
Babe, where are you?
We just don't know what it is. So I'm letting him down. And I have to tell my family I'm leaving and then I'll be letting him down.
Where do you want to be?
Hey, little nug.
This Christmas, I want you to be honest with yourself and the people around you.
Come on, everyone, get in. Say Christmas.
It's just nice to be around family this time of the year.
Thank you, Anjum, for your time and finally being able to chat with you in person and after all these years, it's great to be able to see, you know, another feature film from you. So congratulations once more.
Thank you. Yeah.
I guess I want to start talking about, how this film came about, your collaboration and the work there. But, yeah, how did you come to Nugget Is Dead?
Well, I am a very lucky girl. I've known Easy Tiger, the production company, for probably the best part of 10 years or so. They optioned something of mine years and years ago, and I've sort of kept in touch and done that thing where, you know, every time something's released, I send it to them and just sort of keep in touch that way. And then when I came back from America, I had a meeting with them, but that was before they were looking for directors, I think. And then Jenna and Vic, I met them last year. I was in one of their sort of writers' rooms for another show that they're doing, and obviously saw they're incredibly talented, very smart, very funny, and was keen to do something with them. And so it was that kind of confluence of those two relationships that they both suggested me, and then I had to pitch four times to get the job and then was very lucky to get it. So it feels, you know, very much like it is Jenna and Vic's story, and they wrote a superb script that has brought so much talent to it, but also it does feel very much within the world that I know so well and within the humor and within the relationships that I really love bringing on screen. So it felt like a really beautiful fit, and I feel very lucky. Yeah,
it, like, when I saw that your name was attached, I'm like, cool, I'm excited to see what you do with this. And then watching it, I was like, oh, this is this is an extension of what you've already been doing. So I imagine, like, getting to read their script, was that, you know, the discovery that this somebody speaking your language, exploring the things that you like to do?
Yes, totally. It really felt like that. And I think it was such a delight to read anyway. Like, it is so funny, and you don't often read scripts like that that really jump off the page. And I think what Jenna and Vic did so beautifully was, like, put in the specificity of these characters on the page that made it such a delight to bring it to screen. So, you know, I think it was in the script, like, the our grandma character was who's incredibly played by Diana. She is, like, sipping a, like, takeaway, like, milkshake cup in the back of the car, and just, like, things like that where I'm like, that's so funny and so revealing of character. And so the script was full of that, and was just so evocative of a world that I know so well. And I know that Janice talked about this a lot. She's from Wollongong, I'm from Brisbane, and that was also an impetus behind Suburban Wildlife, sort of bringing a different, an Australian suburbia to screen that is different from, I think, with a different lens than people who come from Sydney, come from Melbourne. So I think the humour was very much there on the page, but what I wanted to bring was a lot of the heart. So I think that's something that I love to do as a director, and something I think I'd pulled off, hopefully, with is making them feel like a real family and making them feel, I think my worst nightmare and what I talked about a lot was there was a world where it could tip into a kind of pastiche or, like, making fun of these characters or sort of that kind of crass Australiana. And hopefully we walk that line where they are real people. And I think this is something I said all throughout pre-production. You know, I use pictures of my dad's wardrobe for John's inspiration. Like, I feel like these characters are part of my family, whether they are like my family or not, but I wanted to defend them and love them, and that the jokes would always come from them and not, you know, down on them was a thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And we'll talk about that a little bit more, but I want to take a quick sojourn to America, because after Suburban Wildlife, you went over there and did some stuff. Can you talk about that experience of getting to see creativity from an American perspective, and what did you learn from that as well?
It was honestly a crazy experience, and now I'm looking back on it, it feels like a kind of fever dream. But I was there for 2 years at the American Film Institute, so I got 4 scholarships to go to AFI.
Congratulations.
Which is the number one in the world, and they'll keep telling you that forever. So I'm deep in the propaganda machine. But it was like incredible experience. Like, David Lynch has gone there, Andrea Arnold has gone there, like Patty Jenkins has gone there. Like, it produces such a high quality of filmmakers and people across like every single discipline. I think that what I really take away from that experience, I'm a collaborative person anyway, but the whole thing that they do to you in AFI is really put an emphasis on collaboration above everything else. And sort of, especially as your role as a director, how are you facilitating the work of the team to get the best out of everyone? How do you work through disagreements? How do you kind of make sure that you are communicating the vision of the story in a way that's like accessible and also inspiring for people? But, you know, different directors work differently, but I am an inherently collaborative person. And I think also coming up through micro budget stuff, what I learned, particularly on Sperm Wildlife, is you are only like, you know, if you don't have your team, if you don't have people around you, you have nothing, you know, like there's no money to hide behind. There's no fancy camera to hide behind. Like, we literally shot it on like a Sony something or other and like didn't have a remote monitor. So if I didn't like Luca, my cinematographer, we'd be completely stuffed because we were like this the whole time. So yeah, I think that is the real joy for me, is working with people and together creating something that's better than what I could do on my own. If I thought I was a genius, I'd be like writing a book or whatever. But like, you know, I think that is the joy of filmmaking, and that's the privilege of filmmaking. And I think particularly, I know you asked me about America, but I think particularly on this project, I just want to talk about like the cast really quickly, because they were so, so incredible to work with and were so willing to be in an ensemble. Like, there was no one who was trying to steal the show or whatever. Like, they were so deep in their characters and deep in the world and had such a love for these people that they were portraying on screen, that they worked so beautifully in that collaborative ensemble space. And I think, so hopefully, yeah, it was like the collaborative environment that I set up was there on set as well, which was so, so gratifying and wonderful, and is definitely partly a result of the AFI propaganda machine doing it.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, right? So the directors that you listed, they've all got their distinct personalities, and they're not driven by any sense of Americana or, you know, British sensibility or Australian sensibility, right? There is the avenue of allowing the director to create their own voice on screen. And having watched both Suburban Wildlife and Nugget is Dead, your sensibility comes through so strongly. Even though you're working in a collaborative manner, it comes through because of the ability that you're giving the cast and the writers as well to let their personalities and their characters shine. And it feels like, it sounds so kind of sappy, but it feels like a family, which is what you want from a story like this, right?
Yeah. That's a compliment.
Yeah. But I mean, you've kind of already touched on this, but you've got some seriously major names here in Australian film. What's it like stepping on set and allowing them to be able to be who they are? What's that like for you as a director?
Yeah, I think honestly my experience at AFI did help with this, because before that I was working mostly with my friends, and one of them is Priscilla, who you would have seen in all of my work. So that was really comforting having her on set. But I think my experience in America was really great to challenge me to work, you know, in a different environment and sort of step up in a way to work with more professional actors, older actors who've been doing this for a long time. But like I said, like, this cast was such a gift. And again, like, shout out to Jenna and Vic's incredible script that was so undeniably great that it brought all these people on board. And working like with an icon like Gia Carides is incredible. Like, it was incredible. I'm like obsessed with that woman, and she was so generous, so wonderful. Like, all of them are. Like, Damien Garvey is, you know, just gives such a beautifully nuanced performance to a character that could have been completely different in other hands. And I think he was looking for the heart and the tenderness within John, who finds it so hard to communicate with his wife, with his family. Yeah, they all, and like Mandy and Stevie, and they're just like, I could go on all day about them, but they really helped me, I think. You know, they were so generous, and there was no sort of ego on set necessarily at all. So it felt like such a gift. And honestly, I was surprised at how natural it felt for me. I didn't really feel that nervous, which was great. But again, you know, I'm only 30, but this is my second feature and I've done a TV show. So I feel like I've, you know, was in a good place to go into this feeling pretty secure and excited, you know, excited to give it a go and direct scenes with 10 people all talking and a dog and, you know, all of the challenges that were on the set, which was challenging, but good. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're doing the things which people say don't do, don't work with animals, don't work with, I mean, there's no kids, but they're, you know, 10 people, as you're saying, talking all at once, but it feels natural, right?
Oh, thank you.
And this comes back to this suburban perspective, which is so, it's so tied to what you do as a creative person. And I love seeing your perspective of Australian suburbia on screen, and especially here, because it is, you know, the Aussie Christmas, or the Xmas for a better term, is something that we, like, it's so often played up on screen. Like, there's been this proliferation of Australian Christmas films lately, which is wonderful to see. But I don't think I've seen it presented this way, with an affection, but also a realization of the tension that comes with it. And there's an affection for that tension. And I'm curious if you can talk about the need or the desire to explore that kind of the push and pull and the difficulties of an Australian Christmas.
Yeah, well, I think the way that I, you know, I'm very heavy on pre-production, like I'm a pre-production fiend, and particularly on something like this where there's so many moving parts. So I had, you know, at the very beginning of the project, before anyone started work, I created this, like, I think it's like 95-page Canva document. And one of the things is, and that goes into every sort of area, but one of the things is, like, thematically, what is this film? And how do we sort of distill what is going on here, and what is Steph's arc? And for me, it's summed up in something that Dr. J says, which is people who love you will make space for who you are. And for me, the sort of narrative tension and the character arc and transformation that Steph goes through is this sort of coming of age later in your 20s. If you have tried to move away from where you've come from, and particularly she's trying to do it and reinvent herself in the city with this very affluent boyfriend, and she's aspiring to have this sort of different life than where she comes from. And I think she feels shame and all of these feelings that you can feel that aren't necessarily warranted, but they're just this kind of like moving away from, or repression, or disavowal of, like, who you are. But I think what she goes through in this movie, and I think what a lot of people go through just in life, and certainly what I've gone through growing up in Brisbane and la la la, is this sort of realization that you are actually a product of all the imperfect love that has, you know, formed you. And I think that that's something, certainly, like I said, that I went through. So I really related to Steph, of that she is like Jodie, she is like John. And we talked about this a lot in rehearsals of, like, are there, you know, what parts of her personality are similar to John? What are similar to Jodie? And what is she blind to as well? And we wanted to kind of build in certain behaviors that they had, or sort of unconscious tics and stuff that they would do, that Steph would do, that Jodie also does, for example. So it is, you know, I think this whole thing, the way I approached it is, what is the like, this sounds sappy, but it is a story about love. And, like, I think through Nugget, he is, you know, I was thinking a lot about, you know, my own dog that I had growing up, and I was looking back at home videos. We got them all digitized a couple of years ago, and I was like, okay, what is it about growing up with a pet? Like, what does that pet represent? Why does it, you know, mean so much to us? And what I kept seeing was, like, Snowy was kind of dipping in and out of frame. She was in between someone's legs, and then she's in the background, and, you know, so she was this constant presence in our lives, and in a big way a kind of witness to our childhood, and can give you this love freely without the difficulty of human communication, and, like, the communication that gets so difficult within families, and particularly a family like the Stools, who are repressed in different, disparate in different ways. Like, the mum and dad are going through a divorce, Steph's moving away, she has difficulties with her mother, Ryan's just chilling, to be honest. But I was like, you know, that, how do we sort of, you know, Nugget is there as this sort of glue for them. And then, you know, throughout the movie, what happens when that glue, there's trouble with the glue, not to spoil the movie. But yeah, so anyway, and then that all translates into how you stage it as well. Like the Robinsons have no trouble loving each other and expressing their love and their feelings. So they kind of move like a school of fish. And I wanted them to always be very tactile with one another. And so if you look at how it's staged, it's like either all four of them are together or they're kind of, the mum and dad are always touching. They're always like very affectionate, whereas the stools are always kind of separate from each other. So the mum and the dad are on opposite sides of the room or the frame or, you know, obviously occasionally interact, but that was sort of an overall approach. So anyway, that's a long way of saying that it all comes from trying to figure out what is this movie about, what is the main emotional arc and the payoff and the catharsis, and then sort of threading that through all of the different departments and how we sort of approach how we're going to tell the story.
I guess on a fundamental level as well, I'm really excited to see Estaffy on screen as well. Like,
oh my God, I know.
Because it leans into the family itself. Like, it is a logical choice that they would choose Estaffy. Was that the decision there?
Yes, we had lots of chats about like what kind of dog that we want. And there's a few times that this is repeated in the film, but Nugget has a very human face. So we needed a dog that had a very human face. And I think Staffies have that beautiful, round, you know, gorgeous, open face. And we were so lucky to get Ruben, who is a legend, number one on the call sheet, incredible, incredible actor. And his owner, Kim, was such a, like, beautiful support on set and was so open and willing to, you know, do what we needed to get the shot and facilitate the scene and everything. So it was a bit of a learning process to see how best we work together, and particularly where there are scenes where there's 10 people and little Ruben. So that was quite a process trying to find out how we do that and how we shoot that. Ruben's going to break a lot of hearts, I think.
Oh, look, it was just so, like, such a beautiful, beautiful, as you're saying, very human face, right? And that's what Staffies do. They have those eyes. They give you this look.
I know.
And there's so much in there. And it's a connective tissue. You know, I love his presence, but I love the whole presence of everybody in it. Like, it's such a warm film. But I'm curious then about, you know, you're working with a script and you also got the actors there as well who have written the script. What's that relationship like for you as a director to be able to take them aside and going, well, I don't think that this is, you know, what you've written, or how do you kind of have those difficult conversations about what they've written and what they're performing?
Yeah. Well, I try to get them all out of the way in pre-production. So be doing that on set, because I wanted them to kind of switch into being actors and not sort of think about their role outside of that. So we had a lot of conversation, and again, I would do that 95-page Canva document anyway, but also because I was very aware that this is Jenna and Vic's first film. They haven't been through this process before. It was a big kind of learning experience for them as well. So, and also that it is a personal story that they're entrusting to me as the director. So it's very much the way I saw that was, you know, the whole pre-production time is spent earning their trust. And so I took a few things that I have done in the TV world, which is that you don't usually do in film, which is like a tone meeting. So usually you do that with the showrunners and the whole team are all together and you go bit by bit, scene by scene through the whole thing. But I wanted to do that with Jenna and Vic specifically and go through the whole movie and be like, okay, so this is how I'm seeing, this is the joke here, this is the rhythm here, this is the, you know, punchline, but also this is the emotional arc. And just over and over again reiterated what I thought the story was, and that just to make sure we were all on the same page. And, you know, I think I did that very successfully, and, you know, it was great collaboration, you know, in pre-production and production. So, I think I took that responsibility very seriously, especially for Jenna. I think it is a very personal story. And I know what that's like to have a very personal story that you're telling, and there is that kind of nervousness and, you want to kind of grab it back sort of thing. So it was a lot of, just trying to be like, it's okay, you're in safe hands, and, you know, excitement about what we were going to do together. And so I was continually checking in, running things by them, kind of more than you normally would. And yeah, just trying to kind of make them feel safe and comfortable and, you know, show the process to them, I think. Yeah.
And you give them the space to build their characters and totally. Find the truth and stuff. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, no, like I think Vic, you know, being lead of a movie is a huge thing. So also trying to take that burden away of thinking of everything else and just being like, you are Steph, this is your role on set, and just be present in that, you know? So, yeah. Yeah,
it's again, it's wonderful. And Vic is, she's a delight. You know, like having to wear an eye patch for most of the film is like that. That takes there's a level of humility there, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I was like, this is making it hard.
Yeah,
she did such a good job, and like, is so funny and such a like everyman, I think, in a way that's so relatable and. Very tender, and you understand it is that thing of like, you know, not everyone goes through this, but I think a lot of people go through this where they go back to their family home and instantly you like regress to a teenager. So it's that tension of being like, I'm a 16-year-old again, but also I'm like a fully grown adult in my late 20s, you know? So it's like the kind of ridiculousness and a humor of that, but then also that comes from unresolved tension and, you know, issues in their relationships that, you know, they start to resolve by the end of the movie. So
one of the joys of watching a Christmas film is you get people around, the family around, and sitting there and watching it. And I guess for you, like that would be something that you're probably hoping for. But if families are sitting down and watching this together, what are you hoping that they might be able to talk about? What kind of experience do you want them to get from it?
Yes, very good question. what I try to do whenever I first read a script that obviously I haven't written, your first reaction is what you want the audience to feel, or is your closest experience to what the audience will feel when they watch it on screen. And what I kept writing was everything to do with recognition. Like I could recognize these people. I'd be like, oh my God, my mom would say this, or my dad would say this, or this is my cousin, or this is whatever. So I would love for that experience to carry through to our audience. And, you know, I think I'm always thinking of our audience, and one of my casual jobs that I've had since 2017 and will have probably for the rest of my life is as an usher at Sydney Theatre Company. So what is so wonderful about that job is you can see the work on stage, and every evening you are there with the audience and you're seeing how the audience react. And particularly also doing web series and TikTok and all that sort of stuff, you can see the comments of the audience, and you're aware of, you know, how much they invest in a character, what they, you know, have trouble connecting with, etc. So all of that is to say that I don't let this theoretical audience dictate necessarily, but I have them in mind of what their experience is going to go through, and they're interacting with the story, and they don't know all the reasons why you did something. They're just reacting to what it is. So I think, again, all that to say is, I hope they feel that very sweet, funny thing, you know, pang of recognition of, you know, they might be commenting on the other people around them being like, oh my God, you do that, Dad, or that's you, I'm Steph, I'm not Steph, you know, all that sort of stuff. But then I think what is so beautiful and is in the script is it's a very real, like nothing is necessarily fully resolved by the end of the movie. It's kind of this opening that begins to happen, which feels very realistic. It's not very movie in that, you know, there's a few conversations towards the end of the film that give a little bit of resolution, but it isn't this perfect Hollywood tie-off necessarily. It's essentially the end of this phase that Nugget is very much connected to, and the opening of a new chapter in their lives. So I hope that kind of provokes conversation and all of that stuff, but also I just hope that they laugh and they shed a tear, and you know, it's something that they can, like you said, like it's such a gift to make a film where you know there will be an audience, and Stan have been so wonderful promoting the film and getting the word out there, because the worst thing is making something and no one bloody sees it. So that will be great that people will actually watch it. But yeah, just I think the act of watching it with your family and laughing together is so nice. So yeah,
Yeah, it's a healing experience, and it's interesting. Like as you're saying, it's not a hard resolution, right? And for me, what I took to the film was, you know, while I do speak to my family throughout the year, everybody's so busy. So Christmas is that uniting time, and that everybody gets together. So it's this beautiful period, and it's usually for families. Well, certainly for my family, at least, there is this reset. Right. And you kind of go through this annual reset. So it's not a finality, but it's just this commencing a new year and with these ideas of what you're going to do. And that's what I love about it. Yeah. It's beautiful.
And I think particularly for Steph, like, you know, she, again, going back to Jenna Vick's beautiful script, like there's this very small scene where she wants, you know, something happens with her eye. Ryan sort of offers her this like eye patch to wear. And she didn't realize that he worked at this like pirate escape room or whatever. So it's just this small detail that she actually hasn't been present in the family. And this is a way of forcing her to be present where she actually doesn't want to be there. She wants to be at her boyfriend's fancy Christmas. And I think, again, like that is it can be a very relatable thing. And then this movie is a sort of way of, you know, reminding you that having people love you for who you are and accepting who you are is such a gift. So, you know, hopefully there's less bratty behavior this Christmas.
Yeah, fingers crossed. But as we kind of lead into wrapping up and stuff, there's on a more personal level, what I was really appreciative of, like this is such a, it's such a small thing of the film, right? But that's the thing is there are so many small things in the film that people can connect to. And for me, one of the aspects was seeing like Alexi as the receptionist at the vet, right? And Alexi's a great person, love Alexi. But in particular, it was, even though he doesn't really do anything, like it was a validation for me before doing what I do and my work and stuff. I was a vet nurse for 8 years. And here in WA, there was a period of time where there was only two male vet nurses. And so getting to see a male nurse or receptionist at a vet clinic, I was like, wow, that's such a rarity. It's nice to see.
That's so cool. I love that. Alexi's obviously a very good friend of mine as well. He did have one line that got cut from the movie. And I'm like, oh my God, Alexi, I'm so sorry. And it was a great scene, but you know, whatever, a series of justifications of why it's cut. But he was so excited to share a scene with like Gia Carides, who obviously is a Greek icon. So it was very fun. And also, you know, I went to film school with Alexi, like we have this long relationship. So again, similar with having Priscilla on set, it was such a like beautiful way of having this kind of continuity of people that I've come up with. And Alexi's doing so well with all these other things in his life and his wonderful career and stuff. So it's just like this really nice feeling of we're kind of coming up together. So yeah, that's so sweet that you recognize that. That's so nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just, again, these little things, you find them in films and you connect with them and that's the emotional attachment. Yeah. But I guess as the last question, which I like covering Australian films and stuff, but I'm particularly interested in your perspective on this, about what it means to be able to tell Australian films on screen and specifically Australian suburban stories on screen. What does that mean to you as a storyteller?
Kind of similar to what I was saying before. Like, I think one of the realizations I had when I was in America, similar to Steph in this movie, is that I am very much a product of where I come from. You know, like, I think I would love to work in the US and I, you know, would love a career, whatever, but I do really feel passionately, the more I've kind of explored other things, I'm like, we have such talent here. And I think it feels like we're on the precipice, particularly in TV, of a new wave of something exciting happening. And I think like you've seen as well, like there has been all of these sort of micro budget films or smaller films that are coming from these really exciting voices in Australia, like Parrish Malfitano, who was in my same year at AFTERS, like he just made his second film and like is a really exciting new voice, like the boys who did Bird Eater, what was that really scary horror one that I will never see because I'm such a like
Talk to Me, is it?
The one about the ghosts or whatever in the hand. And like, you know, I will never shut up about how much I love Muriel's Wedding. I think like that is the best film Australia that has ever come out of Australia because it has that heart, and it has the humor and it has the pathos, and it's just the most incredible film. And again, because it is so specific with its characters, which I think when we tell stories well, that's what we do, you know, like we have such like funny people in this country and like so interesting. And I think the more we kind of bring that specificity of who we are and the sort of difference within who we are on screen, the better our storytelling is. I think where it really falters is where, you know, I'm projecting, but you can maybe there has been a kind of neutering of that Australianness in order to make it more appealing to whatever audience, overseas audience, etc. And so it feels less authentic. It feels like it's kind of behind a pane of glass and you can't really reach it. But I think what was such a unique thing about this film in particular is that it's also going out in the US, and CBS Studios was a, you know, producer partner, and it's going out on CBS and primetime on Thursday, and it's going to be on Paramount in the US. So it's like they have, what was so cool is that they're allowing us to be very Australian, and the cut is not very different over there. So that will be such an interesting reaction. But like, you know, they love Colin from Accounts overseas. So I think we need to just lean into like who we are and not feel any shame. And I think there is a generation of people who feel that very strongly, and there is a change happening, hopefully. So yeah, I think I feel very proud of like who we are, and the crews are so incredible here. And, you know, I don't know, I just keep coming back. So I would love to be part of whatever, you know, future there is in Australian film and TV. So
thanks again for listening to this interview with Imogen McCluskey about her film, Nugget Is Dead, A Christmas Story, which launches on Stan from the 21st of November 2024. Once again, for all our interviews, reviews and articles, head over to thecurb.com.au. For now, we will see you on the next one.